You're listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Vuelta a España in association with Rafa, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004. Today we're in Santo Toribio de Liébano.
This is a cycling podcast. My name's Lionel Boney and I'm with Fran Reyes.
Hello, Lionel.
Good evening, Fran. Where are we, Fran?
Well, we are in a tavern, in the terrace of a tavern, having a couple of beers. Lionel chose the bad one, Estrella Damm, and I chose the good one, Estrella Galicia. There is only the surname as an apparent difference, but actually difference is quite more remarkable.
Well, I was stitched up there because I didn't know. I just ordered an ordinary beer.
Yeah, and they brought you the regular one instead of the good one.
Oh. But where are we? Because this is spectacular here. We're in the middle of a national park.
Yes.
This town is called
Potes.
Potes, yes. Yeah. And it's lovely. The architecture's very nice. It's kind of, it's what I imagine when I think of northern Spain, really. It's very green, rocky, a little bit poking through the green, rugged, really, rather than dramatic. But very attractive, and this is a really nice town here. And well, as you'd expect, really, from a national park, it looks smart and looks like the kind of place that might be quite nice for cycling. But very windy. Is it always windy?
No, it isn't usually that windy. After all, this is the heart, and maybe the door, we could say, to the Picos de Europa, which is one of the most beautiful national parks in Spain, and also one of the most interesting mountainous ranges. Because even if it only some parts of it do raise as high as further up the 1,500 meters, it is still quite lumpy. And for cycling races, this is perfect terrain. You know, there are a lot of beautiful races have been held here, and today's stage is a good show of it.
It certainly was. They came up the gorge here into the finish. We're actually at the bottom of the little 3 kilometer climb where the finish was, and that was a real steep ramp again. And the Vuelta organizers, you know, they basically seek out the steepest roads in Spain, it seems, every year, and they come up with some more beauties. But today was stage 18 from Suances to Santo Toribio de Liébano. It's a hard language. It's hard to get my English mouth around the pronunciation of Spanish.
Santo Toribio de Liébano.
Perfect. Well done, Fran. You got it right. 169 kilometres, and it took 58 of those kilometres for the break to go clear. And when that break did go clear, 20 riders were in it, and they were allowed to get 13 minutes lead, which was the biggest lead of any break in the race so far. On the Collada de la Hoz, Alexis Gouger of AG2R and Sander Armé of Lotto Soudal went ahead, and they were shortly joined by Movistar's Marc Soler and two riders who've already won stages in this race, Julian Alaphilippe of Quickstep and Alexei Lutsenko of Astana. It was Lutsenko's birthday, so a victory would have been the ideal gift for him. Unfortunately, it was not to be. As they approached the finish, it came down to Armé, Alaphilippe and Lutsenko, and at that stage you would have thought that Armé was third favourite to win from those three riders, but on the final climb the Belgian proved too strong for the Kazakh, and he gave Lotto Soudal their third stage win of the race after Thomas Marcinski's two victories earlier on. So a really stellar race for Lotto Soudal. We'll talk about them in the first part of the podcast. Behind, Fabio Aru attacked the GC group. Good-looking attack for a long while, but gained only 12 seconds on the line, although that has managed to lift him up to 8th place overall. We'll also talk about Fabio Aru in the first part of tonight's podcast. Behind that, Chris Froome accelerated. Alberto Contador and Michael Woods were the only two who could match him. And Vincenzo Nibali lost 21 seconds, which is exactly half of the time he gained yesterday on Chris Froome. So the other day I talked about Chris Froome treating the Grand Tours like a game of Monopoly. Well, it's snakes and ladders for Vincenzo Nibali. He climbed up the ladder yesterday, but he slipped down half a snake today. So we're gearing up now for the Angliru. I mean, that's a board game that transcends nationalities, isn't it?
Yeah. I know it. And it was amazing that you used that.
But let's talk about the stage win, because this was classic breakaway territory, wasn't it? And although yesterday we talked about the possibility of some kind of GC ambush, terrain wasn't perhaps quite laid out for it once. I mean, maybe it was, maybe it wasn't, but
the terrain was perfectly okay for a GC attack. I mean, we've seen that in the past in this world, in the Vuelta with Alberto Contador. Problem is, everyone was expecting something to happen. You know, I was talking to a rider that told me that for a couple of climbs, there was a rumor on the grapevine saying that Katusha was going to attack midway to the second climb. And it effectively happened. And Katusha went with four riders to the front of their bunch, and actually they got away on a very Volta Portugal-like move for, I don't know, a couple of minutes, 3 minutes, until Barai Merida shut it down and the peloton was back together. Katusha's DS, Dmitry Konishev, told me that it wasn't a planned move, that they did it because Sky Space wasn't that high as they expected them to be. They wanted to, you know, rock the bunch a bit. It didn't work for them.
And I suppose Team Sky did have several people on the front when it really mattered, keeping the pace high, deterring those attacks. We'll talk about the GC race a little bit later on, but the day really belonged to Lotto Soudal again. It amazes me, really. They came to this race not with a team that you would think they're going to do it. Well, they're not going to do anything on GC. They haven't got a sprinter really to talk of. Thomas de Gendt, yes, perfect for this kind of breakaway terrain, but he had a very hard Tour de France on the attack. It seemed like every day in the Tour de France, perhaps fading a little bit, feeling the effects of that. But Tomasz Marcinski, Polish rider who lives in Spain, he lit up those two stages. And today it was the turn of Sander Armé, who is a 31-year-old domestique, someone who does an awful lot of work for the team without really being noticed. This is, without doubt, and by a long way, the biggest win of his career. I talked to a couple of people from Lotto Soudal up at the team bus at the finish. Jelle Wallace, his teammate, who's had a difficult enough Vuelta himself. He crashed in the first week, really bashed himself up, and he made the point that Sander and others in the team have, you know, really nursed him through 3 or 4 days to make sure that he didn't have to abandon the race. I mean, he's still got strapping on his wrist and says he's just about coming okay now. But he was really made up for Armé to win the stage because, all season he works for other people. And then when he got himself into that break against really riders that you would think, well, if you've gone through those 20 riders, he would probably be in about 17th or 18th on the list that you would say has a chance of winning the stage. Yeah. Their sports director, Mark Wouters, he was, likewise, he backed up a point that Wallace made about sometimes Armé is not terribly comfortable in the bunch. Wallace said, sometimes you need to steer clear of him a little bit, but put out in front, he's very, very strong. He used to be a rollerblader, inline skating.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, apparently a Belgian champion at that, I gather. So maybe he's just happier, when he's able to, see the finish line and ride on his own.
Yeah, I mean, I my first memory from Sander Armé is from Ruta del Sol, Vuelta Ciclista Andalucía. About 5 years ago, he was racing for Top Sport Vlaanderen, and he was all the day on the front of the bunch or on the head of the race, and he was climbing superbly for a guy that high and that heavy as he looks. So, yeah, and today, when I was speaking to Alexander Scheffer, Astana DS, from which we are going to hear later on, he told me that Sander Armé proved to be the stronger, in his opinion, both in the climbs and also in the flats, that all his turns in the head of the breakaway were more powerful than the rest of the riders. And also in the second climb of the day, I think the second Collao, he did a huge attack and was effectively alone in the head of the race for a bit. So yeah.
Well, yeah, he was the one who split it down and then split it down again. So obviously feeling very good. But Lotto Soudal, I mean, they're such a solid, reliable team, aren't they? And I sometimes wonder, there is this rivalry with Quickstep because they're the two big Belgian teams. And I know the Belgian media try to build up this rivalry as if it's two football teams. There's no animosity between the two. They seem to get on fairly well. But I do think when Quickstep keep winning stages, Lotto Soudal managed to kind of say, well, if you can do that, we can do this. And it does impress me when they can come to a race like this with a roster that isn't packed with star names and still deliver results. So, a day where, a bit like Aqua Blue yesterday, not somebody that you would necessarily have picked out at the start of the day, but they're celebrating this evening.
What impresses me about Lotto Soudal, in the comparison between Lotto Soudal and Quickstep team. Lotto Soudal is a Belgian team, whereas Quickstep is a global one. So, since, you know, from that point on, those are two teams that are hard to compare.
Well, it was impressive. I mean, Alaphilippe, perhaps feeling a little bit tired now into the third week. He's been very good. He's been on the attack a lot as well. Lutsenko, likewise, you know, not his day today, whereas he looked so impressive the day he won, of course. But other riders in that group, you know, I mean, Matteo Trentin was in there trying to get some points for towards the green jersey. We'll hear from Matteo Trentin in part three of this evening's podcast. Although it was a day where the break got away and succeeded, there was still quite some interest in the GC battle, to say the least. We'll talk about Froome and Contador in the next part, but for now, we saw Fabio Aru in the Italian champions jersey off the front, seemingly one of those doomed moves that GC riders make when their hopes of the podium have gone, and yet their fighting instinct, their pride, whatever it happens to be, you know, comes to the fore. It certainly looked like Aru was trying to prove a point today, because overnight, Gazzetta, the Italian newspaper, reported that Aru was given only a 39-tooth chain ring for the super steep climb yesterday, where he would presumably have preferred a 36 or perhaps even a 34. And he was quoted as saying, if the team want me to abandon the race, why don't they just say so? Now, Fran, you spoke to Alexandra Scheffer, the Astana sports director, at the finish this evening. Are we any closer to finding out whether there's any truth in any of that?
We are, Lionel, we are. So let's hear straight away.
So we're going to reenact this conversation, are we, with you being Fran Reyes and me being Alexandra Scheffer?
Unless you want to be me, but
I'm not sure. I don't think. I mean, I couldn't grow the hair or the sideburns, I don't think. So I think we'd better stick to our roles. You're much more comfortable as Fran Reyes than I am.
Cos'è successo ieri?
What happened yesterday with Aru's bike?
La bici di Fabio Aru.
No, ma non è successo niente.
Nothing. We decided to change the gears of every bike for the riders to use a 36-teeth small ring instead of a 39-teeth one. Before the start, Fabio noticed his racing bike hadn't had its gears changed. It was a mistake. One in 15 bikes wasn't changed, and it was his. But it didn't go past that. He just took his spare bike, which is his training bike, off the roof of the team car, and he raced with it.
Why did Fabio attack like this today?
Maybe he tried to make a difference for the sake of it. The podium is quite out of his reach, as he is 7 minutes behind, but he has nothing to lose. For a rider like him, it doesn't matter being 7th, 8th or 10th. This attack was a matter of pride.
The stage victory wasn't up for grabs either.
Yeah, taking seconds for the GC wasn't a real goal here. See, in this Vuelta, Aru has been just following wheels and has just been resilient. The Vuelta is finishing, and up until now, we hadn't seen Aru. I think he was attacking because of his pride.
Grinta.
Yes, charisma, grinta.
One last mandatory question. How has been the environment within the Astana team during this Vuelta? It has been reported that there have been some tensions.
It's not true, not at all. Even if we know that Aru might leave this team in the winter, we wanted to do it right until the very end. We wanted to show respect to him. That's why we've left Bilbao with him, working for him every time he has been dropped in a climb, because Bilbao is stronger than Aru right now, and he has taken him to the finish line 3 times already. Had we not respected Aru, we would have left him alone and let him make his own race. Instead of that, we have supported his bid of doing the best possible GC. Well, Alexander Scheffer of Astana there confirming that it was a matter of pride for Aru. Should just confirm or clarify there that Bilbao is Pello Bilbao Lopez de Armentia, his Astana teammate who's been looking after Aru. But yeah, certainly making his point pretty decisively there on the run into the finish, and fair play to him.
Yeah, I think it's great to see this kind of personality attacks. You know, it shows that Fabio Aru is a true leader and a true character. You know, he has this way of standing up before a team that he feels that has treated him unfairly. Speaking to the Astana mechanics, they were just sorry, you know, and they told me, you know, made the point quite a lot of times that this kind of mistakes just happen, you know. It's not a matter of disrespecting Aru or making him go home.
they were just working. They had been working from 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. every day for 20 days, and mistakes do happen.
Exactly, mistakes do happen. Mechanics make mistakes. But, you know, when it's with the Star Rider, it finds its way into the spotlight, doesn't it? And, yeah, it doesn't reflect terribly well on them on that particular occasion. But then again, you know, mechanics, yeah, they make a mistake. Would they have made that mistake if Aru was second or third on GC? Probably not, because they would have checked again. It's, you know, these...
I have been working with in-teams a handful of times, and believe me, these things do happen. The only difference with this, between this case and the rest of cases that probably have happened today and yesterday, is that this one has been reported.
The RAFA Cycling Club is the largest global community of its kind. Members share their passion for the road through rides, events, exclusive club kits and racing. Find out more at rafa.cc.
Thank you to RAFA for sponsoring the cycling podcast. Without them, we wouldn't be here. It's that time of the week, Fran. We've got to announce the shortlist of four riders for this week's Pedaleur de Charme Award, the most prestigious award in cycling, as everybody surely now appreciates. And the prize is the Pedaleur de Charme jersey or T-shirt.
Yeah, I prefer to call it jersey.
Beautifully designed T-shirt, which is available if you go to rafa.cc. You can have one yourself. It's not like the yellow jersey where you're not supposed to wear it unless you've won it. Anyone is entitled to wear the Pedaleur de Charme T-shirt, but only the best are actually awarded it. That's the distinction. Anyway,
exactly. You know, only the best can wear it with pride.
Exactly, you know. Exactly. Well, the shortlist of four, I can already sense controversy brewing here, but the listeners have spoken. The nominations are Stefan Denifield, for winning the stage, but for his charming press conference afterwards, and the fact that on social media he said he won for his baby son, and he posted a photograph of his baby son. Always like that kind of thing.
Yeah, I also want to say that back when I played Cycling Manager on the PC, I always sign him for my team.
Wow, interesting. Well, he's not nominated for that reason, but it's an interesting little note. Davide Villela of Cannondale, he's wearing the King of the Mountains, and he is putting up an almighty fight to keep that jersey. The odds are stacked against him because there's still the Angliru to come, but he is doing his utmost to try and win that jersey. Jack Haig of Orica Scott, just for being awesome in terms of supporting his riders in the GC, even as they have been tumbling down the classification. And the final nomination is a joint nomination for the three remaining Team Dimension Data riders. That's Jax, Janse van Rensburg, Lachlan Morton and Igor Anton. Now, if they win, we will present them all with T-shirts. But the problem is, I only have one T-shirt with me, so we'll have to get a couple in the post to the other two riders.
I can't believe there isn't a single Spanish nominee on this shortlist.
Well, there hasn't been a single Spanish.
I mean, there is only one third Spanish nominee, which is Igor Anton. But come on, a full Spanish nominee.
I'm afraid. Well, you haven't won a stage yet, Fran. I say you. I mean, you're the country of your birth.
So it is a matter of results now.
No, you're absolutely right. It's not. It's not. I thought there for a moment you were going to complain that Alberto Contador is not on the list. I mean, what I will say is he won at the Tour de France in July, and also there will be an overall Pedaleur de Charme prize, and it may well be that Alberto Contador will be on the shortlist for that. You'll have to wait and see, but in the meantime,
given the love that Jacinto Vidarte, Alberto Contador's press officer, shows to me every time I speak to him or ask him about something, we may have to send it by mail.
Well, anyway, if you want to vote for either Denifield, Villela, Haig, or the Team Dimension Data 3, then go to our Twitter feed at cycling_podcast. The poll will be on there for the next 20-odd hours, and register your vote. And, well, we can't fix it. We can't influence your decision. But haven't Dimension Data been wonderful?
Jack Haig.
Anyway, let's talk about the GC, because what impressed me about Chris Froome, well, Chris Froome has been very impressive, hasn't he? I mean, jokes aside about how he's raced the Tour and then the Vuelta, I mean, this has been a masterful, commanding performance from the start to the finish. I mean, he's held the red jersey almost since the very start of the race, since Andorra. He's had a very strong team, but they haven't put a foot wrong. But what he has done is he has taken advantage every opportunity he has had. And today, he was the one who accelerated. I'm sure he was anticipating perhaps attacks, but maybe sensed that Vincenzo Nibali was faltering a little bit. And as soon as he did, he accelerated. Alberto Contador and Michael Woods, the only two who could go with him. I mean, you know, it was an impressive move by Froome, but Contador is going to end his career as he has raced the whole of his career, really.
Yeah. I mean, as for Team Sky, I would say that they have mastered the art of racing a Grand Tour, you know. So far, their Vuelta has been impressive as they have made almost no mistakes. You know, only yesterday, the legs of Chris Froome didn't work that much, but he was perfectly supported by his team. He was by no means abandoned on or anything. So I think this is a Grand Tour victory that has to be written down on Chris Froome and Team Sky's palmarès.
Yeah, I mean, people are talking about how strong Sky are, and of course they are very strong, but really the only rider that has surprised me and ridden beyond anything we've seen before is Gianni Moscon. I mean, yeah. Mikko Nieve, I mean, he's a Grand Tour stage winner. He's someone who's capable of finishing in the top 10, even though he's, you know, into his 30s now. Wout Poels has had injury problems, but, you know, it has a pedigree stretching back to his Vacansoleil days. In fact, I think he was second on the stage to Angliru behind Juan José Cobo in 2011 and just ahead of Chris Froome, of course. So, I mean, it's not like they've got a team of nobodies. I mean, this is Sky's strength, isn't it? They are able to pick a team from their impressive roster of riders that is capable of giving this kind of support, which really no other team can match. I mean, you look at the strength in other teams, BMC Racing on paper with Nicholas Roach and TJ Van Garderen both having been up there, but then the roster does fall away quite quickly. Vincenzo Nibali has Pellizzotti, you know, but again, not a great deal after that. Astana have Aru not in the best of form. Lopez has kind of come forwards and made a name for himself. But Team Sky, you know, the what they have is riders who are prepared to race for their leader without a moment of doubt, about without even thinking of their own ambitions. And what makes them so different to perhaps some other teams is exactly that. And kind of switching topics a little bit, because I want to talk about Wilco Kelderman of Team Sunweb, who is third overall, riding extremely well, as we've said, in recent days. And Team Sunweb have arguably been team of the season in the Grand Tours. I mean, they're a team that kind of, I would say, middle of the table in terms of budget. They're certainly not at the top. They're not at the bottom either. They've had a little bit of difficulty with riders following team orders. They sent Warren Barguil home because he would not slow down and wait for Wilco Kelderman on one of the earlier mountain stages. The goal was always for Kelderman to come here and try and finish in the top 10. He's currently third overall. He's got a heck of a battle with Ilnur Zakarin looming on the Angliru, but I caught up with him at the start this morning. Tell me about your race so far. It must be going beyond what you hoped at the start.
Yeah, it's better than I expect. Before the start, I aimed for top 10, and now I'm third. I never expected that I will be so good. In the beginning was also not so good in the Vuelta. I crashed one time and had some cramps, so the first week was not perfect. I lost some time. And then after that, I recovered really well and was really strong in the stages after that. And till now, I'm feeling really good. So
the time trial result was really impressive. I mean, that's the kind of result that might get you a podium position.
Yeah, I hope so. I'm still really good in position. Zakarin is still really close and Contador has come also closer. But it will be a big fight till the end. I think after Saturday we can look what the place will be.
What about yesterday's stage and that very steep climb? Was that to your liking?
Don't like it so much. It's so steep and I'm also more a climber of a steady tempo and more a normal climb than a really steep one. So it was not my favorite, but that's the Vuelta also.
So about the Angliru on Saturday, is that one that you know? Are you worried by it?
I don't know it, but it seems to be a little bit like yesterday, but more equal, more normal. So yeah, we'll see. Saturday it's just a different stage. It's the last hard one. We see then it's still hard stages to come, and then the Angliru. So we'll see. Yeah.
At the start of the season, you broke your finger in Strada Bianca, and then the same again in the Giro d'Italia on the stage to Blockhaus, wasn't it, where the motorbike was parked, and then there was a crash in the group. You must have been glad to see the back of Italy.
It was not a great time to broke two times my finger, especially in the Giro. It was a big disappointment, also because I couldn't help Tom anymore. So I'm really happy that I'm again on a really, really good level, and yeah, this time I'm just really happy about it. Yeah.
Did you watch the Giro at all after you got home?
I couldn't watch it so much. It was so painful to watch, and also every time I looked at Giro, it was just a big adrenaline. It was coming back, and I couldn't do nothing on the couch. So that's really hard to see, and especially when your leader is in the pink jersey. So I couldn't see so much afterwards. I looked back and. Yeah, I was really really happy with the win of the team. And
lastly, just on this race, Warren Barguil went home because he didn't obey team orders. What's your thinking about that now, a few days later?
Yeah, it's hard to say. Warren went home because he didn't really cope with the team. And that was the reason. And now I have still good teammates. And yeah, I believe in them. So we work with those guys. And that's the most important, I think.
It says a lot about the team that everyone works for one goal.
Yeah, I think that's also something. You work a few months to that, and you speak each other in front of the race, and that's really important. And if you have one goal, then the whole team makes you also stronger. And I think that suits better than you have some different roles and different views. So.
I have to say that I am quite surprised of his consistency during this Vuelta. I was talking earlier to a Dutch journalist from the Telegraph, and he told me that they were actually kind of expecting him to be at this level. That judging from last year, he wasn't due to be this brilliant, but judging by his career, he was actually set up and tailored for this kind of performance, like being a star following wheels and making the best out of these small hilltop finishes.
Yeah, I mean, he made the point there. He's more comfortable on the longer, more gradual climbs, or perhaps on the shorter finishes. The real steep stuff is not to his liking. So it does remain to be seen how he goes on the Angliru. And his lead over Zakarin is only, I think, still 12 seconds. So it's going to be tough for him, but you just never know. Even if he finishes fourth or fifth, it's still a fantastic performance for him.
You know, the other day I was interviewed in the Cadena Ser, a Spanish radio station, and I said that Wilco Kelderman would blow eventually. So for the sake of my reputation within Spanish cycling, I hope he blows.
Oh dear.
Putting
your own ego above
the happiness of Wilco Kelderman.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, Tom Dumoulin did that famously a couple of years ago, didn't he? And then he head in hands from Fran, a rare moment of allowing your mask to slip there, Fran. But he really is following in the wheel tracks of Tom Dumoulin in a way. He's not been as impressive as Dumoulin was in that Vuelta, but you know, even though they're losing Barguil, Sunweb have got real good options for next year.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much to Science in Sport for sponsoring the Cycling Podcast all season. If you would like to get 20% off your Science in Sport products, energy bars, gels and powders and all that kind of thing to help you with your cycling or running, go to scienceinsport.com, add all your goodies to the basket, and then enter the code CPAUG20. That's CPAUG20, and you'll get 20% off.
I wanna love you and treat you right.
Fran, I wasn't expecting to be serenaded here this evening. That's quite beautiful.
Yeah, but Bob Marley was playing here, so I felt like going with the vibe, you know, going with the flow.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, let's go back to the cycling, shall we? One of the interesting side battles in the Vuelta is the destination of the green jersey. It's still not out of the question that Chris Froome could actually arrive in Madrid, not just with the red jersey as overall winner, but the white jersey as combined classification winner. Mm-hmm. He could still win the green jersey. And, well, he's leading in the green jersey, isn't he? And he could just about win the King of the Mountains, I think, if he were to win the stage on the Angliru and maybe pick up some other points on that stage. Have to do the mathematics on that. But the green jersey, Matteo Trentin of Quickstep has won three stages in this race so far. Possibly two more opportunities. Certainly Madrid is there for him. I caught up with him this morning to ask him what his goals were for the remainder of the race. Matteo, it's been a great welter for you here, three stage wins. What do you have in your mind for the last few days?
Of course, in mind is Madrid more than anything else. Let's see how it's going to be for this green jersey. If, let's say, everything has to come together. I mean, GC guy doesn't have to score too much points, and I have to be placed again at least in one stage before Madrid, in at least top three, I think. So it's going to be hard, but I won't die for that. But let's see if something can come together.
And looking ahead at next season, you've been at Quickstep a long time. You're going to Orica for next season. Can you tell me how that decision came around?
Sometimes you need to exit your comfort zone to try to make that step further to be better. And Orica came with a really nice project for me, so that's why I decided to move. It took me really a lot of time to decide it because they came in February already. So I think a lot about it, and then that was my final decision.
You've won stages of all three Grand Tours. In terms of the races, which is your favourite?
As an Italian, of course, I have a special eye on the Giro. Tour is the biggest of the three in terms of exposition by media and all this kind of stuff. And of course, the Vuelta. I did it only one time. That's the first one. So I'm enjoying so far. A little bit too hard for my... For my perspective, even because it's the end of the season, so it's hard for everyone. You see, we are already 40 riders left, less in the peloton, so you can see how hard is the race.
Gaviria won four stages in the Giro, Kittel won five in the Tour de France. If all three of you sprinted head-to-head with no lead out, who would win?
Depends on the sprint. Probably in a straight line sprint, Kittel, probably in a twisty sprint, Gaviria, and probably me, I would always be in second or third.
Going back to Orica, they obviously have three very good riders for GC. What kind of opportunities do you think you'll get there, and what races will you target maybe in future?
Yeah, for sure not GC. Yeah, the classics, and have this kind of freedom I have now with Quickstep in the Vuelta. So starting stages and some sprints in a small bunch sprint where I can pass a climb and have still the possibility to sprint for myself, then it's going to be good.
Well, next year you may well go up against Kittel and Gaviria in a race somewhere. We never know, so we might see if your prediction comes true there.
Yeah, let's see. Let's see.
Well, Fran, Matteo Trentin of Quickstep got into the break. He won the intermediate sprint and took 4 points. So he's now 16 points behind Chris Froome, three ahead of Nibali. Of course, Froome and Nibali are likely to score something on the Angliru. Trentin, you would imagine, would do well in Madrid, but he may well have to score in Gijón tomorrow to give himself a chance of winning the green jersey. I mean, I asked him there who would win in a sprint between him, Fernando Gaviria, and Marcel Kittel, and he didn't really answer. I mean, he certainly didn't give himself much chance of beating either of them. But here, he certainly has a chance to win in Madrid. What are his chances in Gijón tomorrow?
Oh, it's good that you asked that, Lionel, because I was speaking today with a local rider, Ivan García Cortina, racing here from Bahrain Merida as a domestic for Vincenzo Nibali. He was actually quite impressive today on this stage to Santo Toribio de Liébana, as he was able to overcome two climbs and still be working to Vincenzo Nibali. And that, considered he's a quite high, heavy guy, was impressive. Yet, you know, let's listen to him describing tomorrow's stage and assessing the options of a sprint finish.
Impressive effort today, because I saw you keeping
the rhythm of the bunch until so late?
I'm surprised also. A little bit. I start first climb in the front with the Vincenzo and I feel good. The next one also, we know at the Katusha we will try, but I drop a little bit. No, I continue at my ring. I drop, but not much. And in the downhill, I re-enter, and then in the next climb also Pantano attack. I follow him. I don't feel bad, and on the descent also I re-enter in the first group, and to the final like this. But I don't know. Today I feel good, and I don't know why.
So you perfectly know the route of tomorrow's stage. What can we expect of this arrival to Gijón?
I think we'll be surprised at this stage, because last climb, 10Ks to go, is 3Ks, but hard, no? And also first climb from the start, if it's like every day the breakaway is too late, it's so hard to take the breakaway. So if it's like this, tomorrow the 20K is one climb of first category, so will be hard, I think, also.
Sprint finish?
No, I don't think so.
Well, local man Cortina there saying there won't be a sprint finish. The question for Trentin then is how many will be in the break and still away, and will there be a meaningful bunch sprint for him to try and take as many points as possible? So a day for the breakaway, it will be interesting, won't it, on that first category climb. That's going to be a hard, hard start for people, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to form a quite strong breakaway, so we can expect that group to make it all the way to the finish, since also the final part of the stage isn't that prone to GC moves, so yeah.
So it could be another one where the break goes and then the GC riders let them have their head over the top, and then it could be a big gap and then the sort out in the climbs, and then a sort of there's not an awful lot of territory in the last part of the stage to sort it out. So who knows? I mean, it could be quite unpredictable, couldn't it, I guess?
Yeah, let's just hope that Luis Ángel Maté makes the breakaway this time, because this friend of the podcast had been attacking from the badge at nonsense moves for a bunch of stages already. So, yeah, he has very good legs. So let him show them on the breakaway where it matters.
Yeah, I mean, Spain is running out of chances. If the Spanish don't win tomorrow, Fran, we're going to have to ask you to have a look back in the record books and tell us the last time, if indeed ever, we've had a Vuelta without a Spanish stage winner.
Well, for a moment, I thought that you were going to ask me to win atop the Angliru, and that's out of my reach right now.
Well, Alberto Contador could still win on the Angliru, and if Spain is winless going into Madrid, well, Rojas maybe?
No, Rojas never wins, so not him.
Exactly.
Dani Navarro has been crawling in the back of the peloton for the whole race, and these two stages are his territory as well. So I expect him to be strong and fighting for the victory.
Well, we will discuss all of that tomorrow. For now, though, Fran, good night.
Good night, Lionel.